Hi, this is Scriptlock, where we talk about storytelling in video games. I'm Max Volkman.
And I'm Nick Volkman. Today's guests are Claire Hummel and Heli Saloma. Claire was an artist and associate production designer for Microsoft Studios, where she worked on a ton of Kinect games, Fable Legends, Sunset Overdrive, Power Star Golf, and more. She was also the production designer for Westworld VR and currently works as an artist at Valve. And this is her third time back now. Heli is a theater and performance costume designer and most recently provided costume and character design for Remedy's Control and the upcoming Crossfire 2. Her other projects include Mirages for Chroma Productions, which combined live action with virtual sets, and the VR short Ego Cure for Aalto University. Thank you both for coming on again.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Heli, let's start with you. And how did you get into working in games?
I have been dreaming of working on games since I was a teenager, basically. But back then, it felt like a bit absurd. It was like 2001, and I was playing Diablo 2 a lot. And I was looking at those costumes, and I was wondering who's making them. But I didn't really know how to proceed with that dream. So I became a theater costume designer first, which is, in fact, the same job, just the analog form of it. Character design on stage. So I was doing that for 6 years, and then I felt like it would be a good time to approach game industry, because I felt like the technology is so advanced that you can already create such high realism that maybe they need a costume designer already. And around then, it was time for me to write my master's thesis, mostly about costume design. So I was thinking I will ask Remedy Entertainment if I can come and make my research for them. So basically come and work for them as an intern for 4 months, and then see how I could fit into the character process, and then write my research about that. So I started working on that. I didn't know anything about games, and I didn't know how the character process goes, but I was learning that. And then after 4 months, I got hired for the Control, the production of Control.
Was that hard to convince Remedy to hire you initially?
Actually, the lead character artist had been already thinking about it would be really good to have a costume designer. And then there was this event, this game event, and I approached them, just their stall. And they just basically asked me to send my CV, and then I went to the interview, and then it sort of happened very quickly from there. So we happened to want the same thing at the same time, so... That was very convenient.
Yeah, awesome. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And what is your favorite Diablo 2 costume?
maybe the Amazon. Now it's been a while. I was just actually looking at the fourth one. I'm being really amazed about that.
The fourth one looks cool. I've never played Diablo, so I have no idea what any of them are. And Claire, what have you been up to since June, we came on the last time?
Just working on a ton of different things at Valve that I can't talk about yet, and trying to balance day job stuff and freelance work. I'm still doing some more screen printed posters and other side merch gigs. So it's been a busy couple of months, but I'm hanging in there.
So costume design as a specialized role is not really a thing in the industry. For both of you, why do you think that is?
Oh, man. I think that's interesting. I wonder if it's because, you know, in film and theater, it's a specialized design field, because you specifically have to make the costumes. You have to go out of your way to construct costumes for people to wear. And in games, it was kind of merged in with character design because it was all in one. And I think it's only recently, with the advent of technology like Marvelous Designer and things like that, that you're starting to see studios become more aware of specifically costume design and putting storytelling into costumes in a way that film and theater have been doing for centuries.
Yeah, and there is this researcher who's working at animation, and she's saying that maybe it's related to, like, in animation, when they design the character, they don't ever think about the character separately from the from the costume.
Yeah.
And so it's like the costume can be also performative along like with the character. But yeah, I agree, like especially with a marvelous designer and the high realism level that I used that sort of having them as separate parts.
Do you think the role become more prevalent in the industry, or is it feel like it'll just become like every once in a while a couple will have it and it'll be a relatively rare thing?
I wonder. Helly and I talked about this a bit when we met up at GDC, that it just feels like there's still so few people who specialize in it. There are a lot of costume forward character designers, but like when you were thinking of people for this podcast, I was like, well, there's Helly. Oh, she's already coming on.
Yeah,
Ashley Swadowski.
There, Ashley.
I'm sure there are more out there, and I hope it becomes more prevalent, because I think it brings a really unique voice to games that has not always been there, and it makes a real big difference when you can tell that someone with a costume background is designing the costumes in a game. The number of times that I've played games where I'm just staring at a character and I'm like, their jacket just kind of like stops at the belt line and doesn't go anywhere. It just, things disappear and fold in on each other in weird, inexplicable ways. And so I'm always very excited when it feels like someone who actually knows how to sew a seam has designed costumes for a game.
Yeah, I definitely hope it's going to be a thing. Like, especially if the realism level keeps rising, I think it's inevitable to have more costume professionals in the industry, especially like if they come from the background of theater and film, where there's hundreds of years of experience from doing the costumes and sort of transferring that knowledge into the game industry. I would really love to see that.
Yeah. And for games like Control and the work Remedy does, and any games that are dealing with sort of contemporary or near future costumes, I think audiences are more aware of clothing than they think they are. And if you get it wrong, it can be really jarring, even for someone who doesn't have a background in costume. So getting people in who know what they're talking about is a good idea.
It's getting harder to hide. Like, if you don't have the costume construction knowledge.
Absolutely.
Do both of you have common like pet peeves with costumes and games right now?
I feel like the fit of suits, of men's suits, is often off. Especially since there are like so many varieties and different depths of arm size and all these weird little details that you take for granted. And corsets. No game ever gets corsets right. And I hate it.
Why aren't they getting right?
It's, I feel like until you've worn or held a corset, do you really understand that it's this like rigid thing that's holding you in. And so often it looks like an ill-fitted corset, and I feel like the folds that people put into the design are seen as like, oh, we're adding detail, but instead it makes it look like a cheap, ill-fitted garment, which isn't great. When a proper corset is just like smooth and beautiful and fitted to a body.
You know, I think the like fitting is a really major thing. Just, for example, I was watching L.A. Noir the other day, and I know they had a costume designer, and I know they did some scanning for the clothes, but there is one suit on the protagonist that doesn't fit, and it looks like if they scanned it, the scanning mannequin has been too big. But then if they didn't know the knowledge of a good fit, that sort of mistake just got delivered in the game. It just looks like the suit is too small for him. It just doesn't look like a character appropriate. So I think this is really good to be aware of, like the level of fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So heads up to listeners, in case it's not obvious, this episode is going to be all about wardrobe and costume design. And I want to backtrack like 5 minutes ago. Claire, what is Marvelous Designer?
Marvelous Designer is a program, it's software that was originally designed for the actual fashion design industry. And so it's a dynamic draping software where you are literally drawing out patterns as you would if you were sewing. You're choosing where to sew, where to gather, what the weight of the fabric is, and then you can dynamically drape it onto models. And once games realized that that was something they could take advantage of, I remember my buddy Joel Monjean, who is because this amazing sculptor who I worked with at Microsoft was an early adopter of it, and realizing that you could just immediately make a huge baggy jumpsuit covered in straps for a pilot instead of spending all this time lovingly sculpting in all of these compression folds. I think it was such a huge win for the industry. And especially for the photorealistic stuff that Heli was talking about.
Awesome.
It's also fantastic. It's like the fashion industry is using it and the film industry is using it. So now I go around and talk about the benefits of Marvelous Designer to students. I definitely think that that's a tool that all the costume and fashion designers should learn for both if they are wanting to be employed in film or like in the digital fields. Because that's the only tool that we have in common.
Is it a hard thing to learn?
Technically, no. But the pattern knowledge is very essential. I've seen some in-depth tutorials and they've just sort of butchered a pattern and like the outfit looks really weird. Like I definitely think that you need some pattern knowledge and you need to know how costume works to use it. But technically it's easy to learn.
Yeah, it's pretty user-friendly. But as Heli was saying earlier, like the idea of fit is so important and understanding how you let out a seam or where you add a dart to make it fit. Because often I'll play a game and I'm like, oh, that costume was clearly made a Marvelous Designer. So it technically looks like the folds are accurate, but the fit is just super weird or gathered in weird ways. And so actually buying some books on pattern making to supplement is very helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are both of your processes when you're beginning to design a costume?
The very beginning, I always need to know the narrative and the context of the game. And then, the usual script analysis and research, reference material gathering, mood boards, and then concept art eventually.
Yeah, that idea of just getting as much information as I can, which is sometimes very little and sometimes is a lot, but just if there's scripts, if there are prompts, if there's story, if there's anything I can draw from, and then simultaneously doing that process of pulling a ton of research, sketching out raw ideas if I have them, though that's usually only if I'm already well-versed in a universe or in a time period and something's already at the top of my brain, but costume is such a broad discipline that very often you have to bring research in pretty early in the process.
Yeah, such a huge point, the research. So I feel like a lot of people approach the costume design as if it was fashion design and just try to make it cool and kind of neglect the narrative features of costume.
Yes. But,
if it's all about aesthetics, then it's fashion design.
Yeah, that's so important. Oh, I couldn't agree with that more.
So where do you like to pull your research from? Are there like go-to places you're pulling from?
I mean, I have a bunch of like Pinterest boards and online resources that I've collected over the years. I have a very big document of those that I posted a couple of years ago. But more than anything, I have an embarrassingly large library of costume books sitting behind me because I think there's something to be said for actual physical reference books, and they get into niche things and you're avoiding the algorithm of the internet that's going to always kind of feed you the same items over and over again when you're searching for a particular time period or style. So yeah, lots of books, lots of Pinterest.
Yeah, it's similar, but it's initially online. I have a lot of Pinterest boards that I love to do. And then also especially for control, I would gather from, because Remedy had already gathered a big library of reference photos. So of course I picked from there what was related for my current task. And then I went online and went to my bookshelf. I have a lot of like vintage book and all that kind of related stuff. And all around, but I think online like 90% of time.
Claire, which one of those books have you used the most?
Oh, God.
And if there's one for you too, Heli.
There's one book that I use a lot that's weirdly not an actual like fashion era book, but The Art of Manipulating Fabric is this really great book that's all just about weird ways of pleating and manipulating fabric into different shapes, which is really fun to bring in when you're doing weird fantasy costumes that need specific details and not just relying on the same stuff over and over again. And I crack that one open quite a bit.
For me, it might be my pattern book. Actually, it's just the most convenient one. Every time I need like a base pattern for something, I can just transfer it from there. So, and I also use it for teaching. So it's like, very technical.
Right. How do you research things that involve worlds that are more fantastical and like maybe less realistic or less based in reality?
I feel like my cheat is I like finding some weird real world point of reference to orbit the designs around. Sometimes that's literal, like, oh, it's a futuristic time period, but I'm going to weirdly draw color blocking and patterning from Viking clothing or something. But sometimes it's more abstract where it's just drawing from weird microscopic patterns or animals or something. I've seen like series of spaceship designs that are based on different vertebrae. And it's just nice to have anything that just kind of injects some specificity and consistency into fantastical designs. But it is, I do find it to be tough to do fantastical and sci-fi designs just because it's so blue sky. You can do so much with it.
Yeah, I react to that. Like, I definitely think you need that point of reference though, because of that, like a huge frame. I need to like restrict myself with some area. So I mentioned the Pinterest boards before. So every time I come across with something like that is somehow interesting, I might just pin it down. And then when I start a new project, I might go through those and then like find something that I have forgotten. And
Could each of you choose a character you've worked on and talk about the story you each wanted to tell through their clothing?
I could pick Emily Pope from Control.
Sure.
Because she was a tough one because I created this dress code for the bureau and everyone in the building needed to follow this dress code. So they had straight pants and white collared shirts. And then Emily's pressing this, but then I wanted her to express the sort of, because she and Jesse are expressing the new in bureau that as an environment is sort of stuck in the past. So I gave her the modern version of the collared shirt and straight pants. She's sort of like this intelligent young woman with a fashion sense. So, and her collared shirt has this sort of a cut that also reflects with the geometric style of the building. But I just wanted to make her stand out from the other NPCs from also like reserving the black and white contrast for her. I wanted all the other NPCs to be toned in somehow and then sort of like have her stand out with the cut of her clothing and how she wears them and her accessories and this color contrast.
Awesome.
I love hearing about costume design that's based around a uniform because trying to make someone unique within those defined parameters can be so hard, but when it's done well, it's so interesting.
Of course, after I made this delicate design on her shirt, they put the HRI device on top of that. So you can sort of see it.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think of characters I've designed from start to finish. I feel bad talking about Evian from Fable Legends since the game got canceled, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
She was the first character I started when I started working with Lionhead while I was at Microsoft, and she was the last one out the door before I went to HBO, so she was very near and dear to my heart. But I just pulled up the original document of character prompts because the point of the game was it's this Fable game, but it's asymmetrical multiplayer, so it's you choose a group of five heroes. So it's a cast of heroes like League or Dota. And so the idea is making these characters who are compelling, unique player characters that still like hold up within a lineup. And her prompt was Lady of the Lake, entrusted with a magical sword by a powerful wizard, which she was to give to the future king of Albion. He never turned up and she got bored waiting was her prompt, which was extremely fun. So the idea was just designing this Lady of the Lake who got bored waiting for Arthur to show up and just decide to take the sword off and go on adventures. So I was looking a lot at J.W. Waterhouse, who's this turn of the century painter who is very adept at painting waterlogged medieval women, which is an interesting skill. But just trying to bring in those influences and the idea of this sort of bedraggled outfit that's been wasting away in a lake for millennia, but then injecting the sort of fable shape language and silhouette into it, which is an interesting challenge for me. I feel like everything I did for Lionhead had to be pushed like 300% in the weirdness of shapes to really match Mike McCarthy's work, which is a really fun exercise. But yeah, it was a neat process of bringing her into that place of being like, this is a playable character you can do combat with. She can still move around, but she has long flowy fabric, which animators hate. and giving her like this huge out of scale sword that's clearly not intended for her, but she took anyway, was really fun. So
maybe explain for those who don't know, why do animators hate flowy fabric?
Fabric Sims. Fabric Sims are inevitably so difficult. So many of my early Fable concepts are just like long flowing skirts that are totally untenable. But you can rarely have a Fabric Sim. It usually acts up when you're moving a player around and it just intersects with things and goes haywire. And it's so expensive from a performance standpoint. And so with her design, it was specifically designed so the rig of the skirt could just be a couple individual flowing pieces that kind of floated out behind her, so you could fake having long fabric without actually having dynamic fabric in the scene.
Is there any game that you think has nailed flowy fabric?
Oh, God.
Well, Batman, but I think they prioritized the cape quite high.
Oh, that cape was really good, though.
Oh, yeah, it was.
That would have been my answer, too.
Yeah. And it's interesting, though. That's like one single item. It's loose. It's not intersecting with any other costume parts. It was very smartly chosen.
Yeah.
To prioritize that
like
cape.
One person working on it for 2 years and it had like 700 different animations or something like crazy. I wish one of my clothing would be prioritized so high at some point.
That'd be amazing. I know we spend so much time getting the lighting on pores correct and clothing still kind of looks like garbage in games.
Oh, yeah.
It's so sad.
Oh, especially when they get wet.
Oh, God. Yeah.
This is a good segue then for another question. Starting with Heli, but Claire, it will be for you too. Heli, you did an interview on the Remedy blog early on in Control's development where they talked about how, compared to film, games have to deal with different budgets like memory, processing power, availability of artists. And they asked how you had been finding that sort of negotiation. And you said that since it was early in development, it had not been an issue. So now that the game's out, was it an issue?
Oh, yeah.
Claire, has that had an impact on your own process too?
Oh, God, constantly. As we were saying earlier, just costumes are never prioritized in that process. Not never prioritized, but they're not the highest priority. And it is constantly a struggle to work with technical artists and animators to make something that looks good and is still pushing the tech as far as we can while also not breaking the rest of the game.
Yeah, like especially when I started at games and I had no idea about anything, I kept running to the character technical artists and ask them, like, what can I do? And they were very amazing explaining things to me. But then my lead told me that I shouldn't be restricted too much from the knowledge of what can we do. Because if we never push that, then we never solve it. We did try some challenging stuff. Like I tried to give one of the characters like white pair of pants, but we just couldn't make it work. And then our protagonist at some point had a skirt and then but she's such an active character that we couldn't make that work either. And it wasn't character appropriate anymore, like after a while, when the personality changed a little bit. But yeah, there was definitely some surprises because it's not like they could give me a list of the restrictions necessarily. I had to sort of like draw something and then they might be like, oh yeah, we can't do see-through material. So these kind of surprises, but it was always adjusting. It was very interesting. So I always find it inspirational to get these restrictions, and then you have to work your way around them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that idea of, like, the first round of designs, I'd rather fly too close to the sun and then have to pull myself back. And so first round of costumes are always a little more out there and experimental than I think we can pull off the number of times that I've gone from skirts to pants on characters, because it'll just be like halfway through the process and we've tried so many ways to sim a skirt and it just does not happen. But it's as you said, it's just sometimes you get a design that's good enough and you'll get, I work with some amazing technical artists and some of them see it as this challenge that they're just champing at the bit to bite a piece off and attack. And so you never know when someone's just going to solve the poofy pants problem or something.
Yeah. Well, like a pleated skirt.
Oh yeah.
Impossible. I actually, Claire, I use one of your work for teaching. Cause I always show your Elizabeth from Bioshock.
Oh yeah,
your concept, and then I show the 3D model, and then I always contemplate whether the modeler was aware of the certain type of skirt that you were intending, like because it's a high rise, but it's models sort of. I always wonder what happened there.
I think about that a lot with that model, especially since that process working on Bioshock Infinite was. I was doing freelance for them, and so I was removed from the process. Like now when I'm doing stuff at Campo and Valve, I love working directly with modelers and getting to like make something that's better than the sum of our parts because we're working side by side. But with this, it was like, here's the final costume design. Hand it off to Irrational. Don't hear anything else until the game comes out.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to look at the skirt design in the final game, and I'm just like, oh, those pleats are going in the wrong direction, and the waist is a little lower than I'd like it to be. And I'm sure some of that was gameplay choices, but a lot of it's like, oh, if I'd just been on site to explain what that meant or to pattern it out for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I always tell the students, I don't think you were involved in the 3D. And then like, it's important for the modelers to be aware of this kind of like costume details. What is important. Yeah.
This is related to another question we wanted to ask. And it's like, who are your most important collaborators when you're designing a costume?
I was sitting with the modelers, basically. Like, that was my team. So they were the people I mostly collaborated with, especially in the production phase. But in pre-production, I was meeting with the art director and the game director and the lead character artist most. So I guess it depends on the stage of the production. But like looking at the overall production, I would definitely say modelers. And I would constantly be communicating with them, and they would be asking me to do models design files for them or prepare some detailing or reference material. Or it was a really like a good collaboration and very consistent.
Is that the same for you, Claire?
Yeah, I think it's exactly the same. The pre-production process is much heavier towards creative directors, art directors, just really working out the feel of a character and their place in the story. And then the moment you're into production, that ability to work alongside modelers is so important. And I feel like a lot of studios' pipelines don't necessarily allow for that back and forth between concept and modeling. And man, it's so valuable. You just make such better decisions when you can go back to someone and ask what their intent was or what they were trying to draw. Because there's so many things you can get away with in a 2D drawing that just looks like garbage in 3D. And so if you can talk to a modeler and solve that problem together, it's always going to be a lot nicer.
Yeah, especially if the modelers don't have the costume construction knowledge. They might be spending a lot of time on something that I could just give an immediate reply to.
Exactly.
So you're saying like that's the ideal. What's the pipeline like right now where it's not ideal?
I can only talk about the Remedy pipeline that way. We adapted for Control. And well, no, we integrated a lot of analog methods from the stage design, because I found it necessary to have like this like, kind of live references a lot. So compared to the previous pipeline of Remedy, I think we have a lot more connection to the actual actors and their actual clothing outfits, and like having like a whole material library and this sort of differences.
I want to backtrack to like the discussion about the flowing clothing. Is there anything else that doesn't work particularly well for video game costumes that works no problem and is super easy in the real world, like flowing clothing?
Flowing clothing is the big one. I think overlapping fabrics, especially loose fabrics, is really hard. And then we brought up suits, like things that are patterned to look like suits look good when your arms are down at your sides. And then the moment you move around in a suit, which they are not intended for, they distort dramatically in ways that I think we take for granted. And games are not very good at that.
No.
And any garments with different states. So if you like the idea that you sit down, you unbutton your suit jacket, or you adjust clothes as you stand up, or you zip up a hoodie going outside. All of that is extremely hard in games right now without a very smart cinematic cut to hide it.
Yeah, and then like this thing that is still unsolved, the stabile folds. So when you're running, the whole clothing moves, but in games you can't really do that.
Yeah.
You have to you have the certain parts that move, but of course there's a lot more happening actually in the back when a character is moving. So we'll get to that. It's just a technical restriction.
That is the thing I want so bad, because it's something I love drawing. Like, I love drawing someone in a weird pose and seeing the stretch of the clothing. And now we can do wrinkle maps, which can add a little bit of detail, but you're still primarily working with these defined puppets with hard folds.
Yeah.
This is probably a question we should have asked at the beginning, because it's a more general question, but I'll ask it now anyway. What do you think separates a good costume designer from a great one?
I would say the awareness of the costume's narrative importance, but that's basically their definition of costume design. So that's like for everyone. I would like to emphasize the team game, collaboration. Like, you have to be a good team player because you have to be really aware of all the other aspects also of the product and see that your work fits in to that, and not to be too concentrated only on your work or just only on costume. You have to be sort of aware of everything else also.
I agree with all of that. I also think you can, I mean, it's very interesting where costume design is this fully established field in other media, and then in games it's a relatively young one. But a lot of costume design in games, I feel like you can tell when a designer is stopping at their first idea. And not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes you just knock it out of the park the first time, which is great. But when someone's, I of course I'm biased if I see any historical costume designs, the number of times that I see it and I'm like, okay, I know the Wikipedia article they're looking at, or the one garment at the Met that they saw, and that's what they're basing this on. And then they aren't bringing any additional, I guess Helly was saying, they aren't bringing any storytelling to it. They just got it so it's technically accurate, but it's not adding anything. And I feel like there are a number of times where I've been playing a game and I've like paused a cutscene because I've been so taken out of the world, where I'm like, yeah, I guess this dress could technically exist in this world, but it feels so out of place for a character, or it's actually distracting from the storytelling in the moment. I think that's a big, big difference.
Yeah.
How did both you get good at adding storytelling to a costume? Just by doing it over and over again?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think for me, the turning point was, because when I was very young, I started sewing when I was 10, and then I got sort of interested in fashion design, and then I was always drawing clothes and characters, sort of, but more like concentrating on clothing. And then I started doing live role playing, and then through that I realized, because I suddenly had to, I got like description of my character and I had to make my own clothes, and I suddenly saw that connection of, oh, I'm actually expressing myself through this clothing. And I finally found the thing that interests me in clothing. It's not actually the aesthetics of it, but what I can tell and the story I can tell. So very that cool. That must have been the turning point for me.
Yeah, I do feel like that getting over that hump of being obsessed with aesthetics and then making that turn to getting excited about storytelling within costume is a big turning point for making people good costume designers and not fashion designers. I think games especially have always had this obsession with making characters badass first and foremost, and just making them cool and good for cosplay. And then there are like new trends where everyone has discovered that runway fashion exists. And so now the badass has kind of shifted into, we need to make these characters look like they just stepped off a runway and they're super cool. But I think if one thing about becoming a costume designer is learning to the importance of well-designed mundanity of designing like technically boring characters, but still making them compelling. Because it's so fun to draw pretty things. But then once you get excited about ugly things and finding ways to still make them aesthetically compelling, just because of their place in the story and their context within that grander scheme, I think is really important.
Yeah.
I had a couple of lectures recently, and usually the teachers come later to me and tell that they love when I talk about designing the protagonist of Control and what a long process it was and what was all the things that I had to go through. Because every time I showed, because I made 130 concept variation for Jesse or like along the project. And then I show them all at once. And then the teachers say that it's really nice that the students get to see that, because what they do often is that they have the like one idea, then they throw it out and they are like, okay, it's done. And there's no iteration, and they are like not really paying attention to the story. They might start the story after the character. So they are like only concentrating on like making it look cool.
Yep.
So iteration is really important.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Very important.
Yeah. As I was saying earlier, like sometimes you luck out, but so often your first ideas are going to be your most basic ones, and allowing yourself to just explore a space. Even if you circle back to that first design, just the ability to explore more broadly and come up with options is very valuable.
Yeah. As long as it's explained.
Yes.
You have the reason to do it.
Yeah, having intention behind those variations. So yeah. Often I'll see portfolios at GDC where it's a student that shows me a whole page of character design variations. And I'm like, okay, you have the quantity, but tell me the intention behind any of these choices. And they're just like, well, I just wanted to do a lot of them, because that's what you're supposed to do. Like, no, you have to think about it. You got to think about the character, think about the story.
So when you're working on a project, you're designing things initially, how do you find the nerve to pitch ideas that may be too bold or out there, unless you're like incredibly brave already?
Well, Remedy is extremely safe place. I felt really comfortable pitching any idea. I think the environment is really nice for all of those ideas. And then I also have this advantage of not knowing about game design at all. So I didn't feel like I have any other options than to offer a lot of variation, and then they can tell me if it works or not. Like, especially in the beginning, I felt like I can try everything and then see how it works as I go. So I was maybe feeling extra brave, because like I could always say that, oh, I didn't know yet, or I just want to try everything. So yeah, I always felt, and I always had that background in the stage, so I knew what I'm doing what comes to the character expression, so I could always lean on that, and then sort of like take the freedom what comes to aesthetics and all that, like other things around that.
Yeah, I feel like I've also never felt I've never felt too much anxiety on the costume design end of things when pitching out their designs. I think there's a bit of nervousness that comes from if I have a really cool, weird design and I'm terrified that it's going to be dismissed out of hand if I don't frame it correctly. So just giving my team space to understand my intent behind a design, to talk them through it, to show my work a little more and show reference callouts and things like that. But I feel like I've been lucky enough to also have worked on teams that are also safe spaces in terms of pitching new and weird ideas. And sometimes it pays off, which is really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What is the hardest costume both you've ever designed that you can talk about?
Oh, Jesse Faden. I think it's both, because I was clueless in the beginning of the process. So I was taking like extra lapses to figure out how to approach her. And of course, the protagonist is always, she represents the game, and everyone, of course, have an opinion of how she should look like. So the iterations was a lot. Yeah, and she kept changing. Like, I think I worked on her for maybe a year or year and a half, like overall. I learned so much from that character.
God, yeah, I can imagine. I feel like this is annoying because it was a canceled project at Microsoft, but we're working on this game for a while that was codenamed Stormlands, and it had... Designing this costume was, one, it was working on top of work that had already been done by the studio we were working with, so you already have this foundation that you're kind of fighting against, because you know it wasn't approved and people didn't like it, and so you have to do something new with it. And it was one of those designs that just got nitpicked to hell because they wanted this to be like an Xbox One, just show off the technology. So every part of this costume just has some weird material and weird fabric details and all of this little stuff that made designing it just a very harrowing process of lovingly moving tiny little details around, which is like the opposite of casting a wide net, is just slowly nitpicking this thing to death. And then the game got canceled, so clearly it was worth it.
When did you think you cracked that costume? And Helly, I want to hear, when do you think you cracked the costume of Control?
Oh. I thought multiple times that I was cheating her. And then, no. I think I definitely felt like we're getting really close when we... Because after the 130 concepts, I switched to... like actual clothing. So I built up her wardrobe and I bought like all this kind of like clothes that I imagined she would be wearing. And then we had Courtney Hope visiting the studio and I dressed her up. And then we had these kind of photo shoots with her. And then definitely I was having first time that like, okay, we're getting really close now. And then I did the final concert based on those photo shoots. So I think that was it.
Yeah, it is interesting when you feel, I do feel like that's true with costume and character design, that you feel like you've nailed it multiple times over and getting comfortable with that process of someone coming in and just being like, nope, this isn't it yet. And sometimes the design goes past what you think is good, and sometimes it pushes you further and you realize like, oh no, there was a better solution down the road. With this one, I feel like my brain is just a fog from working on this costume. It was just such a niggly little process. But it got done at some point, whenever the deadline was, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely had characters that I felt like this will never end.
Yeah.
Just iterations. Some of them was for technical difficulties, but like, yeah, they all get there eventually.
Yep.
So then when do you know when you're done designing a costume, besides time running out?
Well, yeah, when someone tells you it's done.
Yeah, I was about to say, when the lead says so.
Yeah.
It's tough when it's up to you to make that decision. Like if you are directing a project and suddenly that you're waiting for someone to tell you when something's done, you're like, oh no, I'm the art director, I have to tell me when this is done. But like when we were doing Westworld stuff, it was literally Jonah Nolan would walk into a room and just pick things off a wall and you're like, great, it's done. He chose what he wants. But it's a lot harder when you're just kind of sitting around being like, do other people like this? I hope so, because I think it's done.
Yeah, I think I had that feeling with Emilia Pope. There was not that many iterations for her. Of course, it was a very narrow frame that I got to work in because of the like dress code. But when I figure out the cut for the shirt, and then I just point out some accessories, I just felt like, okay, she's done. And that concept went through the production like without iteration, like after that, and that was... Yeah, sometimes you just get the feeling like that's right.
Yep.
It feels right.
Is there anything you've learned from working on your latest project that will help you with your next one?
Everything.
Yes.
No. So my starting point for the next one will definitely be very different than the last one.
Oh God, yeah, I can imagine. That's such a huge, that's a dramatic shift.
Oh yeah.
In like what way though?
Now I will know what I'm doing. It's like, because my starting point in the first one was very stage-based, so material-based, and I was very connected to the physical body. And so I had to learn all the restrictions and all the pipeline and all the aspects, like all the team members and what they're doing. And I think for the first half year, I was just running around with my writing pad. I was talking to everyone. Also, because of my research, that was really convenient that I got to write that down at the same time when I was working there. And so I had to learn that pipeline first. And then I felt like, okay, now I have some sort of a grasp. Like, what is my spot in here? And what should I do? And from then on, it started getting easier. But I feel like I was learning for the whole 2 years. So a big school. Big school.
Is there anything for you, Claire?
Oh, man.
Is there anything you know you definitely will not do in your next project?
I don't know. I do feel like the projects I am working on right now have taught me to trust my instincts a bit, and also trust my expertise in costume and clothing design, because I think I, especially coming to a large studio like Valve that has so many amazing people working at it, and then someone will get really excited when I explain patterning of a jacket to them, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know what I'm talking about. I should trust this and follow this thread. So I'm trying to get better at that.
So like for writers and other developers looking to expand their character building vocabulary, where should one start if they want to learn more about costume design?
I get asked this all the time. And I should have come up with a better reply already. It's a tough one because my background is in the like physical clothing, and I worked on realistic games. So what I want to say is always that you actually, it's most convenient if you want to learn the costume construction, you need to take classes or like learn patterns or stuff like that. But maybe an easier approach if you, like the difficulty in contemporary clothing is that we all know it because we all wear it and we see it all the time. And I'm worried that that's why it's underestimated, the narrative potential of that, because it's too familiar and too close to us. So I usually tell people to start acknowledging the clothing, what people are wearing, like just look at the people on the street.
Oh my God. Yes.
Imagine them. Why did they choose to wear that today? What does the rest of the wardrobe look like? Were they in a rush in the morning? All these kind of like start figuring out the background of a certain person just from their appearance. And that, I think that can teach you a lot.
Oh man, I have that exact note written down.
Yeah.
I was like, I was like, look through your own wardrobe and think about why you own things and go out on the street and look at people and really just unpack why they're wearing what they're wearing in that moment, where those clothes could have come from. I think it's such a cool way to look at the world and treat it as like you're breaking down the world building of the actual world around you.
Yeah. You just need to start paying attention.
Yeah.
Or then, like give the thought to it.
So what's like a great example of storytelling in contemporary clothing?
In games or in anything?
Anything. I'll make it really broad.
Well, I just overall appreciate if there is a proper female representation in contemporary games. And especially I'm a fan of The Lost Legacy.
Oh, yeah.
It
seems, and I just love how functional their clothing are. And just like very, it looks like very ordinary, but they're really like character appropriate. And I love the dynamics of these two characters. It's just one of my favorite games.
That's definitely a big one. Is I'm sure I said this to Ashley as well. It's just all of them working over at Naughty Dog are very good at contemporary clothing and making clothes that don't make me uncomfortable as a woman. Like just literally uncomfortable in that I look at something and I'm just like, oh, I just want to tug her shirt down, or I just want to. Yeah, where it's like, oh, I don't mind if skin's showing, but it just looks like something's going to pop out. And so it's nice seeing someone. I'm like, oh, those jeans fit you. That jacket looks really comfortable. It looks like you can move around. Is especially in games where more often than not, you have characters who are just vaulting around. And so often the outfits don't seem to reflect that. So
yeah, it's funny when you see like some female characters with like really low pants and short shirts, and I feel like I start tucking my own pants just out of the discomfort that I feel for the character.
If you were like a younger, or if there's like a younger character designer listening to this podcast, and they're trying to have those discussions with like a team lead or something, how would you advise them to like fight that battle?
It's so hard. It depends so much on who you're working with and what your team dynamic is. And it is a constant uphill battle, but you really hope that you're going to end up with teams who are going to listen to you and just have that realization where they haven't thought about something themselves. And then the moment you give them that insight, they're willing to respect it and see it as a way to make the character more interesting and unique. Because I've definitely, like, my current team is amazing. I love the Campo folks, and I feel like I can tell them anything. But I've definitely worked on projects at Microsoft where you just get super gross sexist comments from people in meetings about the fuckability of characters and why they make certain decisions. And it's a real bummer. It can be really hard to speak up. But fingers crossed, just if there are more women in the industry, and judging from doing portfolios at GDC, it just feels like there's so many young women and non-binary folks getting into the industry nowadays, that I think it'll just be more common to have more voices in the room fighting for that same stuff, which is really exciting.
Yeah, there wasn't like a fight over it or anything. It was just very like natural for Jesse, for example, to have like sports bra instead of push-up and like a functional shoes. It wasn't even a conversation, but I guess it's also about a realism level of the game. Like it's easy to, like, if you have a functional character, you can always just say that, like, she can't fight in those shoes, or you can try to sort of like stick to the realism of the functionality. But on the other hand, I really love the stylization of, for example, Bayonetta. I actually love
her
because she owns it. But then, like, I'm just asking for the variation. I don't mind the bare skin if it's character appropriate.
Yeah.
And so, like, I just can't accept this kind of silly design that is obviously only for the skin.
Yeah, especially when it's in hyper-realistic contemporary games and when men aren't treated the same way. Because I'm like, yes, I want weird, sexy games like Bayonetta. But I also, it's so weirdly satisfying. I don't even think I realize how tense I am watching women in games until I look at Jesse's design and control. And I'm just like, yes, that shirt isn't going anywhere. The sports bra looks really comfortable. I would totally wear those boots. Just like everything about it, I just kind of like settle back. I trust that this is a woman in this world. Yeah, it's just really understanding what are the limitations of the universe you're building and respecting that.
Yeah.
Awesome. So one of our previous guests in the last episode, Nicole Martinez, wanted to know, what's the most important thing you've learned about wardrobe design over the years, or something that you weren't expecting to learn? She actually asked about writing, but I'm changing to wardrobe design because it's still applicable.
Yeah, it's still valid.
Yeah.
I think I might return to my point about moving away from badass design and fashion forward design and getting excited about boring, mundane designs was something that was definitely a thing I had to learn over time. Because you go from being an illustrator in college who's just like, oh, I want to make every design as cool as possible. And then you get into games and you're designing NPCs and you're designing characters in all these different contexts. And man, it's hard. It's hard to do, but when it's done well, like I always point to like the Bourne movies as having really good examples of mundane character design that still you can pick out of a lineup. You understand if it is a screenshot of a Bourne movie.
I loved his jackets growing up.
So good. And he's like designed to fall into the background. but in a way that you can still watch him in a movie. It's pretty,
yeah,
it's pretty great.
Creatively anonymous.
Yeah. As opposed to, I love Assassin's Creed games, but the assassins are always so obvious. It's so poorly designed.
You can't see them when they put the hood on.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't like, it's overall wardrobe design, so I'm going to talk about stage a little bit. Because when I was younger, I think the biggest revelation for me was that it's not only about the costume design. This is sort of returning what I said about before. Because when I worked on my first project, I was so concentrated on my own making and so attached to my own designs. That's like, I don't think I was a very good team player in the beginning. It was really like, I wasn't stubborn. I was just like, I was just not considering the overall products. But like, that comes from the experience also. But I want to point that out. Uh-huh. The collaboration aspects of costume design, because it, like, when you're designing costumes, you are working at least with the actor or the body that you're designing for, and the narrative and the set and everything. So
absolutely,
that was something I found really important. But what comes to I need to return to my notes. I wasn't expecting to learn. Can I make this about my professional identity?
Sure.
Yes.
So what was revealed to me when I transferred to games was what I hadn't realized was that how connected my designs are with the physical body. And as soon as I lost that, I was totally lost in games, because I didn't have that actor interaction. And so what surprised me the most, and what taught me about my professionality most, was that, like, as a stage designer, I'm really connected to the physical body. And in the game industry, the lack of the physical body was the huge point that I had to learn to work without that. But then, of course, we in the end had the actors in the process. So I found the compromise there. To work, have the physical body, but like, I also work on the digital.
That was a great answer.
Yeah, that's super good. I love that. I do think that's very interesting to just consider your expectations about what you're going to do going into an industry and then what it turns out to be. I don't think you ever have any idea what you're going to do. I was so sure I was going to go into animation when I graduated from college, and now I've been in games for 11 years or something. So it just kind of sneaks up on you.
Have you ever like thought of transferring from games?
Yeah, weirdly, I was thinking about it after doing Westworld VR at HBO. And then I played Firewatch, and I was like, man, I guess I'd stay in games if I could work for a studio like Campo Santo, but what are the odds? And then lo and behold, I ended up working for Campo, and it sucked me back in. So
yeah.
Our other guest last episode, Megan Starks, asked, when you usually go to conventions or talks, there's often a lot of advice for how to break into the industry, but rarely any advice for how to stay in it. So what are some of the things that keep you going for years and years? Or what's keeping you going right now? Yeah.
I feel like this is advice that I do not take, that I will give, hoping that someone else will take this advice and live a better life than I do. But work-life balance, oh my God, is so supremely important. It's really tough when you're working in an industry that you love to not get caught up in your own sense of self-worth being tied to the work you're doing, and to stay late just because you love the project, but no one's paying you for that time. So take time for yourself. And also, this came up on a panel I was on at Lightbox, but the idea of prioritizing teams over projects, like figure out your dream team and people that are just a joy to work with on a day-to-day basis instead of dream projects, because dream projects will just rip your heart out. But a good team, it just makes your life better, and it's so worth it. So
that's good advice.
I only broke in like a couple of years back. I don't feel like I can really reply, but hopefully I get to reply this in a couple of years.
We'll ask you then.
Yeah.
And then for our next guest, what's a storytelling related question that you would like them to answer?
Mine would be, what game project would you have loved to be part of? Why, and would you have done something differently?
That is good.
That is extremely good. Oh, my God.
I have some help with that.
I guess it'd be interesting to ask non-costume design people how important costume design is to their process and their storytelling. It'd be very interesting.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah. I'm just passing the buck. Just answer this whole podcast.
And man, if we have like a sound designer on next episode, how are they going to answer that?
Speaking as like a writer, how can we make your lives easier?
Oh man.
Can we?
As a writer, how can you make a costume designer's work easier?
Yeah.
I had different kind of descriptions delivered to me during the project, and the best ones were the types that would provide the information of that wouldn't be too accurate, but more like what is she doing and how she interacts with people and like what other people think about them and what are they, how, yeah, all kind of like stuff that I can analyze, instead of like the worst thing you can do is to say that this character is wearing a blue shirt and that's not giving like any information whatsoever. So as a writer, sort of giving more than two sentences and more about the actions and the behavior of the character instead of maybe direct character features necessarily.
It's giving you more of an internal picture.
Yeah, yeah. And that gives me freedom. And I personally really love to work with narrative. So sometimes if I would get more vague description, I could make like a couple of examples and then sort of have like conversation of maybe we could take this direction or that direction. So like I look at the costumes and maybe that ideally support the narrative through that.
I dream of working on a project early enough where I can like sit down with a wardrobe designer and actually like break character that way. That'd be so much fun.
I'm in.
Well. I feel like so much of this podcast is just me going like, yes, what she said. Just repeat it all over again. In the same way that I was talking about the Evian concept for Fable Legends, what I loved about working on that project was all of the character prompts were solely just who the character was and had no visual direction whatsoever. And so it was super fun to just take these little nuggets of character and flesh them out and be trusted to design something around that. And so, yeah, that ability to just understand, like if someone's written a couple scenes with a character or has written out where they're coming from, how they interact with the world is so surprisingly important to costume and character design. It just gives you so much to sink your teeth into in a really cool way. And I, too, love any chance to actually work directly with the people writing my characters and sort of bouncing back and forth. Often because they come up with scenes and I'm like, yes, we can have an alternate costume there, which gets me really excited. So,
good answers. I do have one last quick question. And it's just, what are each of your favorite types of costumes to work on? Because Claire, you were gushing about uniforms way earlier. So I'm just curious.
I do like uniforms because they're a challenge. It's anything where it's you have a standard costume that you need to wear. So whether it's a habit or a uniform or a socially defined like a suit or something, it's a really fun challenge to play around in that space and see how you add individuality in little details and the fit, making something too big or too small or not ironed or anything. It's really fun. And of course, I love historical costumes, so anything in that vein is super fun to play around with, especially since people have these expectations loaded onto historical costumes. So when you hear like a Regency, Jane Austen period, or Victorian era, or what have you, people have these assumptions about what it's going to look like. So trying to find unique ways to play around in that space and to bring character through in that space, I think is really good. Gentleman Jack is my latest obsession in terms of historical costuming. It's set in the 1830s, which is an era I love because it's insane and hideous and it's glorious. But that show is just full of artfully designed costumes that interact with the sets around them, that interact with the actors, which reflect the characters themselves, which are storytelling in and of themselves. And it's just, oh, it's beautifully done.
I'd say two totally different examples. Emily Pope was nice because I had that kind of like really limited space to design her. So it was a challenge. But on the other hand, I loved designing Marshall, this older lady in control. And she used to be very eccentric at some point of the process. And then I would just end up having so much fun with her. And I was iterating her just for the love of the character a lot. So I really enjoyed that. So I think they can both be, like, I really love doing the challenging contemporary things that you have to be really accurate with your design and then, like, go overboard with some eccentric characters.
So cool.
I need to play control, but I'm still very excited to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Where can people find both of you on your social media, or if you have a website you want to plug, you can say it right now.
I am at Shoomla, which is Shoomlah, on Twitter, Instagram, anywhere else you can find me. Probably some embarrassing places. And ClaireHummel.com is my predictable portfolio. So, yeah.
Great.
I'm really bad at social media. I have my website and I'm at ArtStation, but I don't really like write anything anywhere. And maybe I should start doing that.
No, you're doing the right thing.
Gonna go follow you on ArtStation.
Oh, awesome.
Like, unless I'm already following you, we'll see.
I'll put them on the show notes for this episode, but thank you two again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.